Welcome to the Dildork, dorky discourse on sex, dating, and masturbating. My name is Kate Sloan. I'm a sex blogger, a sex journalist, and I think I'm fundamentally incompatible with anyone who doesn't like puns. Who are you, friend?
This is very true. I'm Bex. I'm a sex educator and a sex blogger. And I'm taking an hour out of Kingdom Hearts Day to record for y'all, so I just want you to know how much I love you.
Wow. Wow. I feel honored.
I know.
We're talking about compatibility today, and the pun thing came to mind because when I was a younger slut, I once had a brief ongoing copulationship, as it were, with a dommy gentleman who I thought was very, very charming and cute and funny and smart, and then I found out on like our second or third hangout that he hated both puns and musical theater, and I was like, this cannot be, alas.
Except you were just like, well, I gotta go.
Yeah, I mean, what actually happened was that he just kind of ghosted me for unrelated reasons, I have to assume, because dudes, am I right?
Related like, reasons.
we watched Tangled together on a date.
He went to your Twitter feed and was like, oh god, the puns.
Oh god. This was good dick garbage human. He was a garbage human for reasons other than the puns of musical theater,
oh,
but like
yes,
it doesn't
that makes sense.
It doesn't help, right? Like I really kind of feel in my soul that someone who doesn't like those two things is not a match for me. Like they will just not be able to coexist. I don't know.
No.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
so we're talking about compatibility and there's a lot of different measures of this. I'm wondering, what does it mean to you to be compatible with someone, like, sexually, romantically? And I know this is kind of a difficult one for you because you're kind of, like, on the demi-romantic spectrum, maybe?
Yeah, maybe, question mark? I don't fucking know.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for me, I mean, not necessarily, like, I think I would define compatibility as being just, like, having similar priorities and similar preferences.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically for me, that's around, like, relationship styles. I actually, like, it's really hot to me just to hear people talking about their relationship style and hearing it, like, match up with mine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that alone, I'll be like, oh, hey, we should talk.
Do you mean stuff like poly, or what kind of stuff are you talking about?
More like people specifically having, like, explicit conversations around relationships and, like, being knowledgeable around and, like, conscientious and clearly have spent enough time thinking about their own relationship styles and can actually speak eloquently about their preferences.
Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah, I was interested when I thought you were talking about poly because I think that this is a super interesting conversation in non-monogamy because it becomes sort of a lower stakes proposition in a way because you're not just looking for one person to fit and fill all of your holes and fit all your needs, right? Like you're maybe dating a broad range of people. So maybe if you're not like 100% compatible with some of them, it's fine because you're getting something that you need elsewhere. Although there are definitely still things that I feel like I need to have in every relationship that I'm in or they're just not gonna work.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, for example, I was having a conversation recently with my partner about asexual folks, because, like, I've dated someone on the ace spectrum, and we were talking about, like, how to navigate that and how, like, in poly, like, you can totally do that, like, even if you are a sexual person and you do want to have sex. But for me, like, I, having thought about it a lot, I don't actually think I could date someone who was, like, a sex-repulsed asexual, because even if I was getting sex elsewhere, like, sex is a really important part of, like, how I feel and experience and express intimacy and love and stuff, and I really don't think I could have a romantic relationship without that, but I mean, different people feel differently about that.
Yeah, I think that's really hard, and I think there would definitely, for me, I don't know that it would be entirely out of the question, but it would need to be a lot of conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And around, like, what ways are they comfortable showing intimacy, because they're, I don't know that it would necessarily have to be a sexual relationship. For me, I think I could have a romantic relationship without a sexual one, or at least, like, a deeply intimate relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean,
definitions of romance are complicated.
Right, right. It's all kind of on a spectrum, and it's really interesting to contemplate, because like I feel like I couldn't have a relationship without sex, but also like I haven't really. So, and the one time that I got close to it with the person who was on the ace spectrum, like I actually wasn't that into him. So I don't think that the amount of romantic attraction I had for him could have really like superseded that and made up for it. So yeah, it's interesting to think about.
So that's as far as, like, romantic compatibility, but what about sexual compatibility? Like, what does that generally look like for you?
Yeah, I have learned so many things about myself these past few years. So I, as you may know, if you've listened to this show ever, I am a submissive, bottomy person. And in poly, like we were saying, like, you can do different things from different people. So I think I need at least one of my relationships to be a pretty intense, like, DS-laden type of relationship. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think I feel satisfied in my romantic and sexual life if I don't have a dominant or someone who is acting as such. That doesn't necessarily mean that I need that to exist in all of my relationships. But at this point, I'm kind of not interested in vanilla sex. Like, it just doesn't excite me. Because the thing is, like, once I'm in a relationship where, like, but the person knows my body really well and stuff, then the vanilla sex can be very good physically, and I've been there before and I've experienced that before. But once I started incorporating kink into it, I was like, this is an entirely different level of, like, psychological satisfaction that I was not getting before and that I didn't even really know existed before. So, yeah, now that I've had that...
Yeah, and it's hard to go back.
It is very hard to go back. I really don't think that I could, and like I'm also interested pretty much only in dating people who self-identify as kinky these days, because like I feel like you were saying, they're more thoughtful about their experiences and their preferences and all that kind of stuff, and more open usually to communication and negotiation, and that stuff's very important to me, even if I'm just having relatively vanilla sex.
Yeah, and we've both talked about this. Like, our job is sex education, mm-hmm. and we don't want to necessarily have to teach our partners. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm down with telling my partners what I enjoy, and I'm even down with, like, giving someone resources or whatever, but, like, I'm not here to midwife someone into their sexual awakening. Like, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
That's not a relationship for me. That's my job. Like,
right.
And I think, I agree. I definitely need someone who, like, self-identifies as kinky, has some background, some knowledge, or at least is willing to do a lot of the work on their own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when I think about specific acts, like, I've often sort of posed myself the question of, like, are there non-negotiables for me in a sexual relationship, or, like, if I wasn't getting these things, I wouldn't be happy in the relationship? And I think, like, to boil it down to the very most basic things, I need my partner to be cool with giving and receiving oral sex, putting their fingers in me probably, and probably some kind of impact play. And beyond that, more or less everything is a nice to have, not a need to have. But if I don't have those things, like, I notice it and it is not good for me. I do not enjoy myself usually.
Yeah.
Do you have stuff like that?
Yeah, for me, it would need to be at least some sort of, like, comfort level with kink stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't have them be squicked by stuff I'm doing with other people, even if they don't want to do it with me.
Yeah.
Like, I need them to be down with talking to me about it and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as stuff like, I don't need to receive oral sex, but I would feel some type of way if I wasn't allowed to give.
Mm-hmm.
That would bum me out.
Yeah.
And I need to be able to do some sort of kink thing together.
Mm-hmm.
Some sort of, whether it's, like, incorporating a power exchange or role play, like, some sort of psychological kink stuff.
Yeah.
And as long as they're comfortable leaning into that, I can, like, overlay some sort of psychological thing over all different kinds of kink.
Yeah, it's really interesting how kink can make things sort of mutable like that. Like, I've had a pretty broad range of partners I would identify as dominant and or sadistic, and it's interesting how that can go in a bunch of different directions. Like, it can be more of, like, a DDLG loving type of dynamic, or it can be more of, like, a harsh, humiliating, or punitive type of dynamic, and, like, a bunch of different variations within that. And it's still satisfying to me, just, like, in different ways, but I do kind of need that power differential if I'm gonna have any fun at all.
Yeah. And I think if I had some sort of, like, kink outlet in my life somewhere, mm-hmm. I would be okay with having other, like, more vanilla relationships.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, it would need to be, I don't know, some sort of that gray area between kink and vanilla, right? The, mm-hmm. like, exploratory, adventurous, let's go have sex in a park. Like, I don't know if that's kink, but,
sort
like,
of caramel, if you will. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, I would need some sort of something that feels, because what I enjoy is the experience, right? Experimenting, trying new things, going on adventures. That's what mm-hmm. I really get out of kink. Mm-hmm. So if I can have that in a relationship that doesn't necessarily look like kink to my partner, I could probably make that work as long as I have access to kink in other relationships.
Yeah, right? That makes sense.
Like, if I could date someone who's, like, just a cheerleader of the rest of my kink.
That's cute. A queer leader, if you will. Not that kink and queerness are always the same thing. You know what I mean. Another one that's come up for me in the past few years that I've been learning is I really don't think I can sustainably be with someone who will not have sex with me when I'm on my period. And, like,
oh, yeah, nah.
I used to think I could be cool with it, especially being poly. Like, I was like, I can just go fuck someone else at that time or whatever. And I definitely, like, respect, like, that people are squicked out by it and that, like, you obviously don't have to do anything you don't want to do. But I'm just saying, like, for me, I don't think that that's a person that I can date or fuck on a consistent basis, because it's not that I desperately need to have sex, you know, at all times or whatever, but it's just like, if someone is going to consistently make me feel like my body is gross, whether explicitly or implicitly, I'm just not cool with that. That's a boundary that I've had to draw. And, like, it sucks because sometimes, like, really great people are not into period sex and I have to, you know, say no. But it's like, I love myself too much to subject myself to that.
Well, and I mean, listen, there are a lot of people out there who don't feel sexy on their period and don't want to have sex when they're bleeding, and, like, mm-hmm. that's super cool, too, and those people, it may not be a priority. Yeah. But, yeah, if you're feeling, like, actively rejected,
yeah,
and, like, for a week out of every month, like, right. fuck all of that.
Yeah, no, I can't.
No.
And it's similar with, like, sex when I'm severely depressed, or, like, sex when I'm taking a really long time to come for whatever reason. Like, I really need people who are chill with those things, because those things come up a lot. Like, I have had a lot of sex where I'm just casually weeping the entire time, and I need someone who's not going to be freaked out by that once I explain to them, oh, it's fine, I just have depression and a lot of feelings.
I'm sorry, I'm just picturing you getting fucked, being like, I'm sorry, here's just my bag of feelings, I just brought it with me, it's fine.
Just reading aloud from my journal while getting fucked for some reason? Yeah, I'm into it.
No, just writing in your journal as you're getting fucked.
Oh my god, how have I never done that before? That's wild.
Wait, never?
Never.
You've never, oh my god. Okay, so, can I make a suggestion?
Yes, certainly.
Please write a blog post while getting fucked.
Oh my god. Well, my boyfriend is making a note somewhere. Lovely.
You're welcome.
To detour from love and sex for a second, someone, when I was soliciting questions for this episode, asked about platonic compatibility, and I was like, oh, we should talk about that.
We should talk about that.
Yeah, because, like, the more I thought about it and tried to sort of, like, isolate, like, what it is about my sort of longest-standing friendships and, like, most satisfying friendships that makes them that way, I found it much more difficult, actually, to identify the specific elements than it is with romantic and sexual partners. Because I think, like, also, like, we don't talk about this stuff as much or as explicitly, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're taught to make, like, your lists of things you look for in a partner, right? Mm-hmm. And you don't do that for friends. Like, that's not written in an article in Cosmo or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I've been thinking a lot lately about how you mentioned earlier this, like, demiromanticism stuff that I'm toying around with, and, like, for me, how valuable my friendships are and how, like, core and, like, important they feel.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel connection in friendships that, like, is a lot harder for me to feel in relationships, and just kind of, and thinking about the way that society kind of implicitly and explicitly ranks romantic relationships as, like, the most important.
Yeah.
Like, I'm gonna bring up Kingdom Hearts 3, but I swear it's relevant. there's a scene where Hercules is leaving Mount Olympus and says, super minor spoilers, this is, like, the plot of Hercules and the first world in the game, but, says something along the lines of, you know, sort of like, if you leave, you won't get to see your family, you know, you won't get to live with your family, and he's like, you know, I can see my family whenever, but I won't get to be with the person I love, and what kind of life is that? Like, it was like, he's leaving behind all of this for one person, because that's true love, and that's what you do, and that's the one relationship that really matters. I'm like, that's fucked up!
It is. There's this person named Dean Spade who wrote this essay I love about polyamory, and one of the things he says is that people who practice polyamory should get better at treating their lovers more like their friends and treating their friends more like their lovers. Mm-hmm. And I have, like, meditated on that so many times because I think that's such an interesting insight. And what I take from that is, like, in polyamory or really in any form of non-monogamy, you're sort of decentralizing this figure of, like, a primary romantic partner and saying, like, this person is not going to be necessarily the center of my world. There's going to be other people who I'm relying on and intimate with in different ways. And so, yeah, the deeper I've gone into polyamory, the more I have, like, relied on my friendships and, like, really valued my friendships and cultivated them, because mm-hmm. they do become more important as you start to, like, decentralize, you know, that focus in your life.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
When I think about, like, what makes us platonically compatible, it is very hard to kind of isolate things, because, like, I think really the main thing is, like, I just like you, I just enjoy you as a person. I think that you're, like, fun to talk to and fun to be around, and, like, the choices that you make consistently, I'm like, okay, that makes sense, I see where you're coming from, as opposed to, like, some friends of mine who have been like, what the fuck, like, what are you doing?
Yeah,
but it's like, so we make each other laugh, which I think is really important.
Yeah, at least 2-hour friendship.
Right, right. Well, yeah. I think, like, for me, that's important in, like, any kind of relationship I'm going to have, like, at all. Yeah. Like, we need to have some humor stuff in common. And another thing is that I think that our introversion and our brains kind of, like, work in similar ways in terms of, like, what we need. Like I think of often, like, when you were visiting me in Toronto last, and we both, I think, were kind of feeling like, well, we should, like, get out and, like, do stuff. But what we both really wanted to do was stay in my apartment and watch American Horror Story for, like, 8 hours. So that's what we did. Yeah, and like...
We kept apologizing to each other, too, yes. Like, for being like, I'm sorry I'm not being more entertaining, but, like, I'm sorry that this is all I want to do. And you were like, I'm sorry that this is all I want to do. Like, we're basically like, I'm sorry for this perfect day we have concocted for ourselves. And then I, like, went out and got baked goods and stuff.
Yes, didn't it was I? Truly... It was so good. And, like, a thing I noticed about compatibility in general, romantic, platonic, is, like, often I'll have that reflex to, like, want to apologize to someone for something I'm doing. And if we're compatible, oftentimes the response will be, like, you don't have to apologize for that. I love that. And that comes up in my sex life and in my dating life and in my friendships. And, like, it's really interesting how that works.
Yeah, I think what you were talking about our brains working similarly is... a big part of it, especially in our friendship, that, mm-hmm. like, so many things that we both struggle to articulate, the other person is just like, oh, yeah, no, I know that. Like, yeah, that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we have, like, very similar life experience, but also very different
mm-hmm.
in that, because there's definitely too similar. Like, there are definitely people I've met where I'm like, you are like me, so I hate you, which probably says a lot, but it's okay. Like, yeah. or basic, like, I've definitely looked at people and been like, you seem perfectly nice, but you are everything that annoys me about myself in another person, so I'm gonna leave. but I think we have a lot in common. We used to talk, remember back when, like, we first started getting really close and talking about, like, being two halves of the same brain?
Yes, yes. Okay, so the story with this, I'll tell this story. I was at a party, and a guy who I had a crush on was being really flirty and, like, couple-y all night, and then at the end of the night...
Oh!
at the end of the night, right, like right before he was leaving, as everybody was leaving, he asked me to go to dinner with him the following day. And the following day was Valentine's Day. So I was freaking out. And I was there with a friend of mine who I was telling her about it and about the whole history of the situation and like trying to figure out like, what did he mean? And like, is this a date? Like, and I was finding that I just wasn't feeling better. And I was like, I really need to talk to Bex because it feels like half of my brain is missing. And you were busy at work, so you were not answering your texts. And it really, like, I felt like I couldn't, like, fully process what had happened until I talked to you about it. And I was like, oh, well, I guess we're best friends, so.
Yeah, well, and I think part of that, like, also, I think a big part of that comes with, like, how long we've known each other and, like, mm-hmm. how much time we spend. We also, I think another reason we're very compatible is we both process things by talking about them and thinking them through like way too long and like
hence obsess over things.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But we both have those kinds of like low-key obsessive personalities.
Yeah.
And will and can be outlets for that for each other.
Yeah.
And I've definitely like messaged you about things. You're like you're like the backup hard drive for my brain. You like have most of you have most of my life memories too. So I can just like message you and be like, "When was that thing?"
Yeah, or sometimes we're podcasting and you're like, "Oh, do I have a story for this?" And I'm like, "Oh, what about that time?" And you're like, "Oh, yeah."
Yeah, I do have a story. Great. Yeah. and I think that's the kind of thing like I don't know that that's a compatibility thing, but like that's definitely something I think is really valuable in relationships.
Yeah.
Having that level of, like, context for the person's life.
Right. And in terms of the obsession stuff, like, I feel like my friends sort of fall into, like, two broad categories, if I could categorize them this way, which is some of them are very, very obsessive, like me. I think mm-hmm. of our pal Brent, who I've had many, like, way over analytical conversations with, because we both are, like, similarly obsessive. But then there's also, like, a whole other type of friend that I have who is so, like, 2 feet on the ground, like, pragmatic, not like that at all, which, like, I need that type of friend also so that mm-hmm. I don't float off into my fantasies every single time. So I feel like you're actually, like, somewhere right in the middle there, which is nice.
Yeah, because I will, like... I will really get down into it, but I will also, like, I will be like, yes, tell me all of these things. Like, get all of it out. Great. Here's a practical solution.
I love it. I love it. So speaking of what you were saying about context and knowing someone for a long time, I'm curious if you have thoughts on, like, the difference in a dating context between, like, long-term versus short-term compatibility, because I do think those are kind of two different things.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I don't know if it's long-term versus short-term compatibility, to be honest. I think it's more a level of how much time in an individual session I will spend with them.
Mm.
Like, into an individual burst. Because I could, you know, there. I think it's more a matter of there are people who I will spend, like, a week with and, like, yeah. could just, like, live with them and, like, be chill with that. And there are other people who I'm like, let us spend a night together and it'll be fantastic. And then you need to leave.
Yes.
And come back next week. Mm-hmm. and there's a whole range in between there. Or like, so I don't know that it's a matter of like, this is the kind of person I could know for years. But it's the kind of, it's a matter of this is the kind of person I could spend years with.
If yes, that makes sense. Yeah, as an introvert, like, that is so real, and it's weird yeah. because, like, I almost can't identify what it is about people that makes me able to spend that much time with them versus not, but, like, my partner came and stayed with me for a week, and we literally spent the entire week solid together. Like, we didn't even really go into different rooms at any point, except for when we were using the bathroom, and sometimes not even then, and it was like, I was not... you know, tired or sapped by that at all. And when I think about it, I think it's like two things, basically. It's like, I feel fully comfortable to be myself around him, even when that is weird. And mm-hmm. he is also very, very extroverted, which is something that I never really thought I needed or wanted in a partner necessarily. But it means that he is able to do some of the emotional labor, social work at times when I am less able to do that. And so it doesn't feel as taxing on me.
Yeah, that being able to be fully comfortable yourself around someone is a huge mm-hmm. thing, I think. I have... Because for me, I've been thinking about, like, how to describe my introversion, because I didn't realize I was introverted for a while, because I'm not particularly shy, and I'm not, like, overly socially anxious.
Yeah.
People just make me tired.
Yeah.
And, like, it's like carrying a puppy around, right? I love puppies, and I'll be so excited to carry it, but also they're heavy, and my arms get tired, and I need to put it down sometimes. Yeah. And that's kind of how social interaction feels for me. And, so I think being able to, like, put the puppy down and rest my arms around someone and, like, just chill.
Yes.
And I think the extroversion is really helpful. For me, I don't know how much it's that as someone I find fascinating. Someone I just, like, enjoy what they have to say and can just listen to. And I think it is, like, and they can just talk.
Yeah.
Because one of the big things I worry about in social situations, like, I don't have a lot of social anxiety, but pretty much the only thing that I do is what if we run out of things to say.
Yes. Yeah. I've definitely noticed, like, conversational flow can be a great measure of how compatible I am with a person, although you have to take into account also that, like, sometimes when you first meet someone, you don't have it as much because you don't know each other's rhythms and patterns and, you know, and it gets easier as time goes on. But yeah, I've definitely had relationships where, like, I didn't really want to talk to them because I didn't really have a lot to say to them. And I was always just kind of like, can we get to the fucking part? And that's always where I was like, I should break up with this person.
That's probably not a good sign.
Right. Like, I liked them best when I was fucking them. And that's, like, not ideal.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, on the introvert-extrovert thing, it's really interesting. I've been in love with 4 people in my life, 2 of them very, very introverted, 2 of them very extroverted. And I found when I was dating introverted people, it's nice in a way because they can really relate to you and understand what you feel and what you're going through, and you can have these kind of, like, chill, introverty hang sessions. Mm-hmm. And but, like, what I noticed, especially in my, like, super long-term relationship with an introverted person, is that we would fall into these ruts where we'd just be like, well, what do you want to do tonight? Well, I don't know, what do you want to do tonight? And, like, we just end up hanging out at home, ordering takeout, and, you know, separately scrolling through Reddit or something together. And it's like, I kind of need someone who's going to force me out of that, because I on my own will not force myself out of that. So that's kind of something I'm conscious of when I look for partners these days.
Yeah, I could definitely see that being valuable.
Yeah. Have you ever had, like, a short-term dating situation where you're like, well, you'll do for a while, but, like...
I mean, yes and no, honestly. So, like, I don't... I mean, I'm very aware that every relationship is, you know, ephemeral, like, will end eventually, likely. Mm-hmm. Or someone will die. That's pretty much your only options.
Until we invent immortality, but, you know.
Yeah, so I try to avoid relationships where I'm like, all right, we're on a deadline, I'm gonna get tired of you in, like, a week and a half. I'm, like, watching the bar approach the line here. Mm-hmm. Try to avoid that. But, yeah, I don't, like, at the same time, I don't go into relationships like, this is gonna be my forever.
Yeah. See, I sometimes also do, but I'm a gross romantic, and I also, like, I'm aware as I'm thinking that that's probably not realistic or true, but I do kind of think far ahead, because I am an absurd person who should be in therapy, but, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's what I was gonna say, because, like, I'm also not a romantic.
Yeah.
So, like, I go into 90% of my relationships, like, you are good. I enjoy you for right now.
Yeah. Which I think is actually
I will continue
great.
To enjoy you.
Like, I think that is, like, a zen approach to relationships that I always really envy in people, because I get into these anxiety spirals where, like, I'll see a small sign of incompatibility, and I'll be like, well, clearly we can't date, and we'll break up, and I'll be sad, and then I'll be alone forever. And I just, like, get into these, like, catastrophizing loops about it. And it's, like, actually, like, relationships, as you said, like, they all usually end. And so, like, you should really enjoy them where they're at currently. And, you know, if you think too much about any particular relationship, you could definitely come up with reasons why it'll have to end. But that doesn't mean that it has to end right now. And you can kind of enjoy it, you know, where it is right now.
Yeah.
I think that the times that I have most felt like someone was short-term compatible with me but not long-term is times when they had a primary partner. Yeah, so, like, there have been times in my life when I have been sort of, like, casually dating or maybe just got out of a long relationship or just, like, wasn't in the mood to be dating someone seriously where I was open to being sort of a secondary partner for hierarchical poly folks. And that was actually kind of an ideal situation because there wasn't a lot of pressure on me, there wasn't a lot being asked of me, and that's what I needed at that time. But I also at the same time was aware, like, I don't think hierarchical poly is long-term suitable for me. And particularly not if I start to fall in love with the person, like that would make me feel absolutely bonkers. Yeah. And so it was always kind of with this knowledge that like this has an expiration date. But like that said, those connections were like really valuable to me at that time. And I really appreciated having them.
Yeah, definitely. I could see that being really valuable. Mm-hmm. And I agree. I've done hierarchical poly. I don't think I could do that again. And that like I could not do monogamy.
Yeah.
Definitely not. But yeah, as far as, I don't know, I feel like relationship style compatibility and romantic compatibility are somewhat different things.
Yeah, but I mean, ideally you want to like, have both.
Yeah. But I feel like relationship style compatibility is just so, like, logistical and factual. Like, it's just a checklist. Like, do you agree with these things? No, we're... Sorry, you're not eligible.
Right.
Like,
right.
You don't meet the prerequisites.
I have boiled it down to a checklist many times, and there is like a part of me that wants to bust that out on a first date because like it's frustrating to have to like put time into people and then find out that they don't meet your kind of basic core requirements. Like, you know, the time I dated a dude for a month and a half who I then found out didn't believe in privilege and oppression. And I was so frustrated with myself because I had just assumed that since he seemed, you know, good and charming or whatever, that he was a good dude in these other ways that I needed, like, understanding how the fucking world works.
Yeah.
And I couldn't have, you know, that assumption was not a safe assumption to make. And, like, it does make me want to bust out that checklist on first dates. And that's not a chill move.
Yeah, no, but there are so many things, and, like, the problem is a lot of that is, like, not first date conversation.
Right.
But, like, I don't have time. Like, if you're monogamous, I'm not, if you, like, I don't have time.
Yeah.
I don't have time for hierarchical poly. I need someone who's, like, vaguely comfortable at least meeting and, like, having, like, mild rapport with their metamors. Mm. Like, you don't have to hang out, but you need to be able to, like, be in the same room together at my birthday party.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and just, like, basic political shit.
Yeah.
Like, you just need to be...
There was a time when I was...
understand social justice.
Right. When I was younger, there was a time when I had the luxury of not caring as much about that stuff. Like, I was kind of one of those people who was, like... Well, I mean, I would prefer if you were a feminist, but, like, I get that, like, maybe you don't identify that way for whatever reason or whatever. But as shit has gotten dire in the world, like, I don't have time for people who don't identify as intersectional feminists and, like, live it in their day-to-day. Like, why would I waste time with someone who doesn't feel that way? You're, like, actively contributing to the detriment of society. Like, I'm not interested in sucking your dick. Like, I just, you know, I'm over it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Angry rants mid-episode. Love it. Okay, so a question that comes up a lot when I think about compatibility is, like, how sometimes you can mistake attraction or NRE for compatibility, and they're not uh-huh. really the same thing. Do you have any, uh-huh. like, thoughts on how to differentiate there?
I mean, I'm usually relatively okay at that.
Mm-hmm. Because you don't get super strong NRE, usually.
I don't know how true that is.
It's complicated.
It's complicated. Because I do get very strong NRE.
Mm-hmm.
But I, like, see it happening over there, and it's annoying me. Like, my NRE is following me around, tapping me on the shoulder, being like, hey, have you thought about that person recently? I don't know if you remember.
Yeah.
But they're really cute.
Mm-hmm.
Carry on. That's fine. Hang on. Have you seen this picture of them, though? Like, that's my NRE. So I can tell it to shut the fuck up, and, like, it generally doesn't blur the rest of my judgment.
Mm-hmm.
But it is loud, so occasionally. But for me, I try to, like, in as much as I can, think back, okay, what have I prioritized before I knew this person? Mm. What is it I enjoy about them? How much of that is based in things that I've actually seen them do, mm-hmm. or heard them say? And are those things I've valued in the past, or are those things that I think will, like, have value to me in the future?
Right.
Those traits kind of separate from this person.
Yeah. It's very, very hard to be objective in that way.
Yeah.
And, like, I think my main tool, especially because I am a person who goes really deep into NRE and who idealizes people and fantasizes about people and just is very crushy, my best tool has been talking to friends about a new person I'm interested in, because I notice if I'm, like, making excuses for something that someone has done or said and trying to explain it, like, I know that they said this, but, like, they're actually really a good person. That's when I start to be like, oh, maybe I should examine that more closely. Like, I know that when that non-feminist dude said that shit to me, I texted, like, a bunch of friends about it immediately, and there was a big part of me that wanted to be like, he said this, but, like, I think he is a feminist, he just doesn't realize it because he likes strong women and blah blah blah. And it was like, no, like, as soon as I start making excuses and justifications to my friends, it means that something is up that I need to look at.
Yeah. Yeah, because I feel like when you're doing that, you're basically making... So, when you're in NRE, you're high. Like, just brain chemistry, basically, you're in an altered state.
Yeah.
So it feels like the way you're talking to your friends, you're basically, like, talking to your sober self.
Right.
And you're making rationalizations to the self that you know we all know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you're talking to us, but...
Mm-hmm.
Also.
Yeah, and, like, not to get too sappy, but, like, with my current partner, I noticed that I pretty much never did that at any stage in our early relationship. Like, there was never anything he did or said that I felt like I had to explain to my friends so that they would get where he was coming from or whatever. Like, all my friends were just like, wow, he sounds really good. He sounds like he treats you really well. And that has actually been so rare in my dating life. Like, there have been so many dudes who, like, I was really into who my friends were like, maybe, you know, think about this again. And that didn't happen this time. And, you know, that makes me feel much better about it because I don't trust my own judgment about people I date. Okay. Have you ever had a moment with a partner or someone you were fucking, dating, whatever, where you were like, either like, wow, we're really compatible, or like, wow, we are really not compatible?
I've definitely had... I've noticed that more, I think. Well, I was going to say I've noticed that more sexually, but that's not entirely true. I've definitely had moments where there's a person I've been hooking up with lately and, like, low-key dating, where we've had sex a couple of times. Like, the first couple of times we did that, we were like, we just every time afterwards, we're like, we're really good at this. Like, we're just... really good at this. And it's like we're just into the same stuff and like our bodies just mesh well together and we fuck like high schoolers and it's great. We fuck like we just discovered what sex is. We are both extremely kinky and we keep forgetting to do kink. Like, it's ridiculous. And I have no idea what that is. It's just that's just how I am with this person. It's just like that compatibility, and I don't necessarily know, like, what to put my finger on for that.
Or who to put your finger on.
Well, I know
in.
How to, I do know what to put my finger on, that's the point. just saying. as far as I think, like, romantic and friendship compatibility, the biggest time I've seen that happen, and it always makes me smile, is when... seeing them have the same reaction as me to something.
Yeah.
Moments where, like, I'll be having a conversation with someone and say something, and then the other person will come into the room, and the same thing will come up, and they'll say the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, you know, organize things in the same weird way I would, or, like, little things like that, where you're just, like, weird little quirks that you have in common.
Yeah.
That's one of those moments where I'm always just like, oh, okay. And it's like superficial compatibility, but it's like that little warm, fuzzy feeling.
Yeah, it means it's like kind of like a plant above the surface, and it could be attached to a root that goes deeper than that. And it's just kind of a little sign that you might be compatible. That's cute.
Yeah.
Yeah, one that I noticed a lot in my last serious-ish relationship was that I really need us to be compatible in the ways that we handle stress and the ways that we behave when we're stressed out. So, like, my last boyfriend, when he was stressed out or depressed or whatever, he would, like, really withdraw and not want to talk to anyone and, like, not even want to, like, answer texts. Which is understandable, but when I get depressed, I need kind of the opposite of that. I really want to be with the person I'm dating or the people I'm dating and, like, be really intimate and close and talk about feelings and stuff for the most part. And so him, you know, pulling away, especially if I was also depressed at the time, like, that really was not compatible because, like, I felt abandoned and he felt, like, imposed upon. And so that's definitely something that I've started to notice and look for in, like, all different types of relationships is, like, how do we treat each other when we're depressed and, like, how do we fit together in that way? Not just depressed necessarily, but, you know, like, stressed or sick or whatever maybe, because that stuff will come up, especially in, like, a more long-term type of connection. And if it doesn't work well, it can, like, really blow up even if everything else is going pretty well.
Yeah, it's also, I think, really valuable to explore the ways you fight and the way you deal with conflict.
Yeah.
Are you a person who needs to, like, yell it out or get into your feelings? Or, like, do you want to sit and cry through and, like, that sort of thing?
Yeah.
Are you the kind of person who wants to, like, air your grievances and have a moment to think it through and then come back with stuff? Like, what does that look like? I know a couple who, when they get into fights, they go sit in separate rooms and text each other, like, in the same house.
Yeah.
Just because through writing, they get through whatever that disagreement is easier.
Yeah. That makes total sense to me. I'm like that, too.
Yeah. So, yeah, and I think it's just a matter of knowing these things about yourself, too. I think that's really valuable.
Yeah.
As far as talking about NRE stuff. I know I made jokes earlier about, like, making your lists, but, like, do that. Sit down and write about what you prioritize when you're not thinking about a certain, like, particular person.
Mm-hmm.
Or do it at various times with different people in mind and see what kind of consistencies you found in your relationships that have been really valuable to you. And then go back to that and recognize that and, like, think about these things and think about what works for you.
Yeah, it's been really interesting to see how my lists have evolved over the years, that type of list, because I make them fairly often. And, like, there's interesting changes that have happened. Like, it used to be very, very super important to me that the person be in a creative field. Like, I really wanted to date, like, an actor or an artist or writer because I just felt like, as a creative person, like, I needed someone who would, like, identify with and understand that. But what I've come to understand is, like, there are people whose brains work in a very creative way, but who have just, like, chosen a different manifestation of that for their career, either out of necessity or out of choice. And, like, that doesn't mean that we're not compatible. Like, you know, my partner is an app developer, but his brain works in very artisty ways. And he used to do theater, and he's a writer, too. And so, like, you know, I was looking for this very surface level thing that I thought reflected certain qualities, but, like, those qualities don't always come out in exactly those ways.
And I mean, I would argue that developers are a creative
vocation. For sure.
Like, that is creatives, it's just in tech.
Absolutely, exactly. And I was very, very attached to this sort of bohemian idea of, like, wanting to date a struggling artist or someone who would, like, directly get that. And, like, you don't need that. There's lots of different ways to be creative.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what's valuable about that is that you were prioritizing what you thought a trait would look like instead of the trait you wanted.
Right.
And I think that's helpful when you're making those lists. Like you were saying, you know, maybe artist is on your list, but tease apart why. What is it about that?
Mm-hmm.
And could your list just say creative or something along those lines? And maybe not, right? Like, maybe you want the life experience that comes with struggling for your art. Maybe that's what you want to connect with. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's cool, too. But, like, explore the whys behind what you're prioritizing. And maybe you can get it in different ways than you expected.
Yeah, Yep, that's really smart. As far as, like, moments of feeling very compatible with someone, this just happened recently. I was out for dinner with my partner. It was a very, very cold and snowy night in Toronto, and I was like, you know what sounds really good later? We should do a wax play scene. And he was like, yes, and we should, like, put on good music. And I was like, yes, and we should have the window open a little bit so it's, like, cold in the room, but it's, like, hot with the wax. And he was like, yes. And I was like, maybe I should be high. And he was like, yes, yes. And so we started talking about how, like, I've had very few relationships in my life where, like, the sexual things that we wanted together were, like, almost all of the time a fuck yes. Like, I've had relationships where, like, people would propose a sexual thing and I'd be like, yeah, sure, like, that sounds fine and fun, whatever. And the same when I would bring something up with them. I've had, like, very few relationships like this where, like, almost everything we bring up to each other, we're both, like, very, very excited about it. And, like, I don't really know exactly what that is. I think it has to do with, like, him being very toppy and me being very bottomy, dommy and subby. But it's, like, when you find that, like, it's deceptively rare. And,
yeah,
you know, it really makes me want to hold on to someone when I find someone like that, whether it's romantically or platonically or, like, whatever the thing is. Like, you know, it's actually pretty hard to find that sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, you being like, fuck yeah, let's watch American Horror Story for 8 hours. I was like, this person's a keeper.
Exactly. Like, that was all I wanted to be doing. I was so happy.
So good. A listener asked about astrological compatibility. I know that we've both gotten more into astrology over the past few years. Do you put any stock into that kind of stuff?
So I know almost nothing about astrological compatibility.
Mm-hmm.
I know that I'm a Scorpio rising and a Leo Venus, and no one should ever date me, ever. For those not versed in astrology, Venus is the planet that controls your romantic relationships. Leos are known for being self-centered and requiring a lot of attention. And Scorpios are known for wanting to be left alone all the time. So basically, I'm a cat. And I want you to love me on my terms and then leave me alone. I would say that there are definitely traits inherent in each sign that, like, mesh better with each other, if that mm-hmm. makes sense, right?
Yeah.
But I don't know that I would, like, look at a chart and be like, well, not dating that person. Like, I think, yeah.
Yeah, it definitely wouldn't, like, put me off of someone. I'm not that hardcore about it, but it is interesting for me to note that, so I'm a Taurus, which is an earth sign, probably the two most serious boyfriends I had before my current one were both also Tauruses. My current boyfriend is a Capricorn, which is an earth sign. Also, you and my brother, who's my other best friend, are both earth signs. So it seems to me that I am drawn to people who are similarly sort of stable and rooted and dependable in ways that I feel like I am, because that's something I need. And it is really interesting to notice how many of those people have been drawn into my life in this way.
Yeah, I'm a sucker for Leos.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's terrible. Leo fuckboys, I can't help it. It just happens. I hate them, but I want to fuck all of them.
There's just something about a Leo fuckboy, I don't know.
I know.
Good to Garbage Human was a Leo fuckboy, by the way. Never again. Kind of a heavy one, kind of a sad thing to contemplate, but at what point in kind of an incompatible relationship do you decide, you know what, this just isn't working, we need to break up?
I don't know, man. Like, for me, this just comes back to what we were talking about earlier, about how there are so many deal breakers that, like, don't come up right away.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, yeah, you wind up knee-deep in a relationship, and you find out they don't believe in privilege. And I think, like, I talked about this earlier, where I think it's valuable to know going in what your deal breakers are.
Yeah.
And to recognize when you've hit them.
Yeah.
And, like, it sucks, and, like you talked about, bring in a friend to, like, be like, you know, mm-hmm. this is what I know about myself, this is what is happening, am I at that line? I think I'm at that line.
Yeah. Yep, you have to find a way to kind of access that objectivity, even though it's really hard. And another way that I try to do that is I try to pay attention to how this person makes me feel overall on average.
Yes.
Because, like, a lot of times when you're in, like, really intense NRE and you really, really like someone, but they're kind of bad for you, you will have, like, very, very intense high highs, but very low lows. And sometimes the lows are, like, more frequent than the highs, but the highs can kind of drown them out and make you, like, justify to yourself, well, like, you know, sometimes they're so great, so I want to spend more time with them and, like, just see if I can get back to that. And I have found that if someone, like, regularly, consistently makes me feel terrible, like, no matter whether they're doing that on purpose or not, whether it's something that's their fault or not, like, that's something that I need to look at more closely and be like, maybe this isn't working out so great.
Yeah, absolutely.
Another thought I had about this was about sexual incompatibility. As I mentioned earlier, like, I dated a person who I think was maybe ace, and for me, that was a deal breaker. But, like, I got a lot of hate, actually, about it from, like, some of my friends and some people online who said, like, you know, sex isn't the only part of a relationship, and it's not the only thing that matters, and you're overvaluing sex, and I'm wondering what your take is on that.
My take is any reason to break up with someone is a valid reason to break up with someone.
Yeah.
Like, relationships are optional. If you are sitting in a relationship going, God, I don't want to be in this relationship, it doesn't really matter why. You cannot be in that relationship.
Yeah.
Like, and you're doing someone a disservice by sitting in it. If that is a thought you're having, I mean, if it's a passing thought, like, whatever. But if that's something that you're, like, pervasively thinking about, you're doing someone a disservice by staying in the relationship, even if you think your reasons are stupid.
Yeah.
Like, if I knew my partner was like, God, I want to break up with him, you know, but, like, it's stupid, but I just want to break up with him because, like, I hate how he chews with his mouth open or whatever, like, it's fucking stupid reason, but if you want to break up with me, do it, like, so that, but also, our culture undervalues sex as a whole.
But also, like, overvalues it.
But weirdly. Also overvalues
it.
It's
super strange.
Yeah. You're supposed to think about it all the time, but, like, not care about it.
Right. And it's kind of like, if any other activity in your relationship that was important to you was not going well, like, if the person was, like, really bad at watching movies, like, they were just, like, always shouting at the screen and, like, shit that you really didn't like, I feel like that would be reason to sort of examine whether you were compatible or not, but, like, because it's sex, people are like, oh, well, it's not important. If it's important to you, then it's important.
Yeah, and you hear that so often in monogamous relationships.
Yeah.
You can only have sex with this person and they're bad at it, but how dare you break up with them because of it? Like, what the fuck?
I know. I mean, I've genuinely known people for whom sex is not that important and who truly, like, it's not a big priority for them in their relationships. And I think if you're with someone who also feels that way, fine, cool, whatever. That is not me. And I've had to come to that realization. And, like, also, I think it's important to note that, like, if someone seems to be bad at sex, however you define that, it might be a good idea to talk to them about it, see what you can, you know, instruct them on, see if you can get them to adjust their technique or their approach in certain ways that will make it work better for you. But if you've done that and it's still just, like, not really working, like, I really don't think you're obligated to stick it out at all.
Yeah, and you're not even obligated to give them pointers.
Yeah.
But, like, if you're invested in the relationship.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think, I say that because I think a lot of people, especially those socialized as women, have been given this idea that, like, well, if you don't tell him about the clit, think of all of the people he's going to date after you and blah,
right,
blah, blah.
Like the campsite and, like, rule.
Yes. But also, one of them could do it.
Yeah. Or, like, he could independently research it himself because he's a fucking adult.
Exactly. Like, he might notice people don't fuck him more than once. And maybe he'll want to make that better. Or not. I don't really care. You're breaking up with him. You don't have to talk to him anymore.
Right. When I was dating the non-feminist dude, like, 4 out of my 5 friends who I asked were like, break up with him. And the fifth one was like, well, it was a dude, of course. He was like, I used to be like that. And then, like, a bunch of, like, really woke women, like, taught me stuff. And so, like, maybe give him a chance, maybe put some work into educating him. And I was like, I see where you're coming from, but also that isn't really my job, and I don't really like him enough to want to do that.
Exactly. That's the thing. It's work, right?
Yeah.
And we can equate... I do this all the time when people ask me, when, like, strangers ask me for advice, right? If I'm going to give you an hour of advice and I generally get, say, $25 an hour, mm-hmm. are you a person that I would give $25 to if you asked me to borrow it? And I have a lot of friends that I absolutely would. Mm-hmm. And if they come to me asking for, like, an hour worth of my expertise, I absolutely would give it to them,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think of that similarly in this relationship, right? The hours of time I would put into teaching them.
Yeah.
Am I that invested? Right. Would I give them that money in cash? Like, if they That's said really they needed good. It, would I give them that money in cash? And, like, this... And, like, saying that, there are a lot of times where the answer is yes. Mm-hmm. There are more times when the answer is no.
That is a really useful metric. You're compatible with someone if you would give them cash.
I mean, that's how you get compatible with me.
Okay, well, I hope you learned some stuff from this episode and that it helped you think about your own relationships and what you might be looking for, what you might be aggressively not looking for. I have been Kate Sloan. You can find my sex blog at girlyjuice.net and the rest of my writing at katewritesaboutsex.com. You can also follow me on Twitter and Instagram at girly_juice. I am going to hit 10K Twitter followers in, like, not too long. So if you've been, like, putting off following me on Twitter for some reason, please go do that. I really want to hit that 10K. Who are you, friend?
I'm Bex. You can find all my writing at BexTalkSex.com, and I'm on Twitter and Instagram at BexTalkSex. Together we're the Dildorks. We're at the Dildorks on Twitter and Instagram and at TheDildorks.com. If you want to support us, you can toss a couple of bucks our way by going to patreon.com/TheDildorks.
Thank you to Protodome. He did our theme song. He's at protodome.bandcamp.com. And thank you to Amy. She did our logo. She's at starboots_ on Twitter. And thank you to you for listening. Until next time, folks, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life. Bye.
Bye. It's Kingdom Hearts O'Clock!
Nailed it.
I'm so excited!
Yay!
Ow, fuck! Hang on. Cat, Jesus Christ. Ah! What are you doing? Get off. Ow, ow, ow! She was, like, clawing the fuck out of my thighs. Oh my god. There is a Rachel Lark song that... It says, like, exactly what we were just saying, by the way, and now I'm singing it in my head.
Okay.
She says she, like, has a song about relationships or whatever, and it's just four lines. But it's, you know, let's love till we can't love each other no more, let's fuck until our bodies are sore, let's hold on tight till it feels like a chore, and then let's not do it anymore. And she's done.
Ideal.
I'm like, yes, that.
Yeah.
Exactly that. I'm Bex. You can find all my... I don't fuck Jesus Christ. Okay, hang on.
Wow. What a mess. You tried.
I started to do my intro.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Dildorks.